This show is brought to you by 13 Turns, a new horror anthology by Kevin Carr. 13 jolting tales of terror, murder, and the macabre. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the Angry Birds movie, The Nice Guys, Neighbors 2, Sorority Rising, and A Bigger Splash. I'm also going to be talking about the news, the trailer park, the box office predictions, and of course, the home cinema roundup. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Thank you, Ron Burgundy. Let's jump right into the news. The first piece of news I want to talk about is probably going to take up all the time that I have. And it's not really news. It's more of a reaction to something that's going on right now, because there was a new Ghostbusters trailer that dropped. And I'm not going to play it because I played a trailer a while back. You know what my thoughts are on Ghostbusters, this reboot with Paul Feig directing, like Melissa McCarthy and Kristen Wiig. Well, some guy on the internet basically came out and said, I'm not going to review this movie because it's my beloved childhood movie and I don't want it to be ruined. And that's his right. I mean, look, unless you're paid by an outlet or the job description requires you to see all the movies in wide release, there's nothing wrong with skipping a movie. And there's also nothing wrong with making a declaration that you're skipping a movie because they're remaking something that you loved as a child. They've remade so many movies that, you know, they're dumping on a lot of people's childhoods. That's fine. You can have that issue. And in fact, I applaud somebody for saying, I'm not going to review it because I don't even care to see it. I want to remember the original Ghostbusters the way it was. Be the same way back in 1996 or whenever it was when they remade Psycho. For somebody to say, look, I'm not going to go see Psycho, the Gus Van Sant version, because I don't want it to taint at all my experience of rewatching Alfred Hitchcock's version. In fact, I encourage you, if you have no interest in seeing a movie, don't go see the movie. Well, apparently when this guy did it, immediately everybody comes just jumping all over him saying, sexist, you hate women, you don't want to see, oh, you're butthurt because women have leading parts, and oh, shit, you're such a sexist pig. And they're just the screaming about misogyny is overbearing, and it is okay to be critical of Ghostbusters and the remake of it with stunt casting by saying, we're going to do a girl Ghostbusters. Just make a movie with women in it. That's fine, but don't say the big twist is we're going to have girls in it. There's nothing wrong with criticizing that as a choice. I remember when they did Elementary on TV, the Sherlock Holmes version. I never really watched it, but I remember when they announced that Lucy Liu was going to be playing Watts, and I'm kind of like, well, that's sort of stunt casting. That's just, hey, let's put a girl in that role. And it's okay to be critical of that, not because you hate women, but because you think it's just stunt casting. It's a gimmick. It's a trick. What it shows is that people, especially on the internet, and I'm not just talking about just everyday people, I'm talking about people in my industry, people who review and comment on films and trends in films. There's this neo-feminism that is insidious in many ways. Now, look, I'm all for feminism. I am all for equal rights for women. I am all for treating human beings as human beings. The problem I have with aggressive feminism, and I had this problem with it, well, I wasn't around in the 60s when it really kind of emerged, but I had this problem back in the 90s. The modern feminist movement that started, it was really in the 90s, that kind of went away for a little bit and it's coming back as this neo-feminism online stuff, is it's not saying we want women to have equality or the same opportunities. We want women to be treated with kid gloves. You can't criticize us and you cannot make fun of us. And I say that in this way, because going back into the 90s, two of the biggest TV shows in the 90s was Coach and Home Improvement. And both TV shows relied on kind of a goofball character as the lead guy, you know, the coach and coach, and then Tim Allen in Home Improvement. Why I hated those shows was they made the man in the show such buffoons. I mean, they were so incompetent at everyday life things. It was amazing they could put on their pants in the morning. And then they were foiled by a wife. And the wife could do no wrong. And she was the most boring character on the show. In both Coach and Home Improvement, there was no depth to her. There was no flaws to her character. And if there was ever a flaw that she got in trouble for something or got into a scrape, it's because she loved too much or she cared too much or she was just too involved and took on too much. She couldn't be a buffoon. Well, look, if you can't laugh at yourself, you lose a lot of your autonomy. And that's why this is insidious and bad, is it's not saying, oh, women should have equal rights. It's saying women should be put separate from men, but only equal when we want them to be. I'm like, no, equality all across the board. Women can be buffoons as well. I am all for women being buffoons. Go back to one of the greatest sitcoms of all time. I'm talking sitcoms and not movies, but one of the greatest ones of all time. I Love Lucy. Lucille Ball was as big of a buffoon as Ricky Ricardo was. That's what made the show great. And even like Honeymooners, you know, Jackie Gleason in that, he was a big buffoon, but so was his wife in her own ways. And that's kind of what made the show fun, is they were just a bunch of idiots. It's the same thing in TV shows, modern TV shows that I actually like, stuff like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia or The League, where the women in the shows are just as big of idiots as the guys are. And that's kind of what makes them fun. I don't want to watch something where the women are put in this pedestal and you can't touch them with any sort of criticism. So there's nothing wrong with criticizing Ghostbusters for stunt casting. And if you think it doesn't look like a good movie, that's okay too. Because I've seen the trailers and I'm like, I'm unimpressed by this. It seems like they're trying to recreate Lightning in a Bottle. It's just not going to work. We'll see when it comes out. I'll watch it. I have to. The other piece of news that I really want to hit is Kevin Smith. He's been seen all. I talked about Kevin Smith last week with Yoga Hosers, but there's been all these reports out there online that said Kevin Smith is making a Buckaroo Banzai TV show. That's not true. This is the problem with our industry, is it's falling apart. Everything has to be a clickbait article. Kevin Smith was approached by MGM to say, would you have a take on doing a Buckaroo Banzai TV show? There's no pilot, no script, nothing's in place. They don't even know where it's going to go. They're just talking at this point. When Kevin Smith is actually making this is when I'll believe it. Otherwise, he can't get off his fat butt and stop smoking pot. And he's making movies like Yoga Hoosers. Wasn't he supposed to be doing Clerks 3 years ago and Mallrats 2 years ago? And this stuff's finally maybe starting to happen. This is like the Avatar sequels. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is The Neon Demon. And this opens on June 24th.
I see 20 or 30 girls come in here every day. Some girls crack under the pressure. You? You're going to be great.
What's it feel like? I walk into a room. It's like in the middle of winter. You're the sun. It's everything.
This is Nicholas Winding Refn, and I like some of his stuff. I liked Only God Forgives to a degree. I loved Drive. But I understand he's a acquired taste of a filmmaker. It looks like it's beautifully and lavishly shot. I'm just bored of the fashion industry. This looks like it's trying to be, to a certain degree, the black swan of the fashion industry. And yeah, it'll be nice to see supermodels walking around naked. Sure, I'll look. But I have no love of the fashion industry, and I don't have any sympathy for the fashion industry. The fashion industry is the most vain, self-centered, self-destructive industry out there. And people who love it and the people who glom onto it, they're being intoxicated by the glamours here, and they just want to become part of it. To me, it's the same thing of people wanting to go to the cool party at school with the abuse of popular kids that don't like them. The other one I want to talk about really quickly is Inferno. Opens on October 28th.
Only you can finish it. You are humanity's final hope.
It's Dante's Inferno.
Dante defined our modern conception of hell 700 years ago. Why Dante? Why this map of hell?
Someone created a plague.
Robert Langdon's back. I think it's cool to have Tom Hanks continuing this role, Ron Howard, and I'm excited that Felicity Jones is in it. I love Felicity Jones. So this one actually looks really good. It looks like it's going to be more of the same. If you like the other two, you're probably going to like this one. That is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the Angry Birds movie and a bigger splash. Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
My shirt, so sexy it hurts.
Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies. Starting into the movie reviews, let's hit one of the big ones that's going to be here this weekend, and that is the Angry Birds movie. It's exactly what you think it is. It is about the game Angry Birds. After a band of pirate piggies steal their eggs, the birds on an island seek rescue and revenge.
Greetings from the world of the pig.
These pigs are mysterious and weird, am I right? I don't trust them. I think they're up to something.
Your opinion is not needed.
The pigs are stealing our eggs.
Set sail for Piggy Island.
You tried to tell us, but we didn't listen. What do we do now?
That is where they went, and so that is where we're going.
If you've never touched a mobile device and you don't listen to anything, you may not know who the Angry Birds are. But I mean, if you have any sort of smartphone, you've at least seen an advertisement or somebody playing Angry Birds. And I remember when Angry Birds came out a couple of years ago, I really enjoyed it. I've bought most of them at some point. I downloaded either free versions or I've downloaded the full version of a couple of them. They're fun games. They get to a certain level, like any game you play on your phone, you get to a certain level and they become too hard. And then I abandon them. But they've done a lot of stuff, and it's hysterical because they just came out with Angry Birds 2. But that's after they had like Angry Birds and Angry Birds Seasons and Angry Birds Star Wars and Angry Birds Transformers and Angry Birds this and that and the other. I love the game. It's a fun game. It works, and there's a reason it's one of the most popular games. When I heard that they were making a movie of it, you kind of have to sit there and go, because movies of video games just in general are almost always terrible. But I'm like, well, this kind of has a story to it, and it's a cartoon, so maybe you can do something with it. And they do, I guess. It's an animated film. Kids are going to love seeing it. It's got bright colors. It's everything you'd expect from an animated film based on a video game, and the designs are pretty close. There's a couple character designs that they've changed, I guess, and they like change different, like Matilda, which is the white bird. In the game, she soars out there and then she lays an egg and she gets very small because she's really big. And then she gets very small when the egg comes out. The egg explodes. She goes flying away. They change that, I guess, because they're trying to save the eggs and you can't have Matilda out there pooping out explosive eggs when they're supposed to be saving. And I mean, they give a little bit of a backstory, like Terrence, who's the huge red one that just plows through everything, and Bomb, the black one that actually acts as a literal bomb and blows up. It's got a lot of recognizable voices, but the only one that sticks in my mind is Jason Sudeikis, and he basically plays Red, who's the main angry bird. But it also is presented as an origin movie. The birds aren't angry. Red's angry. Everybody else isn't angry yet until the piggies show up. And it does, at a certain point, feel like it's just going through the motions, because you know what Angry Birds is. It's about launching birds and blowing up pigs. And it takes so long to get there. That's one of my biggest problems with the movie, is I'm just like, oh, the story's not that good. It's not that compelling because it's just set up as a MacGuffin or a framework to get to the launching of the birds. When they finally have the big climax, when they are going after the pigs and you've got the birds flying and shooting, it's cool. And it's fun. It's all the lead up and trying to just, you can really tell that they are working almost too hard to make these characters work. The other problem with this movie is there are two schools of thought when making an animated film. One school of thought is sort of the Pixar school of thought, that no matter how out there your story is, no matter how bizarre it is, and no matter how crazy the setup of the movie is, there needs to be a certain level of heart to it. And Pixar is fantastic in taking their characters in the most insane situations and at times just slowing the movie down, having a nice quiet conversation, and revealing some beautiful emotional moments. Inside Out does that gorgeously. So does Up. All the Toy Story movies have that. Inside Out is one of the most out there movies, some of the most bizarre, high concept films, and yet they have these moments where they just sort of sit there and it becomes about the characters. That's the Pixar school. That's very hard to do. It takes a lot of work on the script and it takes a lot of work directing it. The other school of thought is when in doubt and when it's slowing down, go big. And the louder the better, the more obnoxious the better. That's the school of thought that Angry Birds does. It never backs off. It is like going to Chuck E. Cheese with 24 kids who have been doing nothing but pixie sticks and drinking Jolt Cola all day. And then having pizza and cake. They just get loud and they're in your face and it's constant. And of course it's in 3D. So they are literally in your face. I do this with my kids. You know, sometimes your kids, you're crazy and you're just like, okay, stop. Oh, I just need to breathe. That's how I felt like as a parent. I don't think parents are going to respond to this the way kids will. Little kids are going to love it because it's obnoxious, crazy cartoon birds being insane. The adults, I think, are going to feel like the parent that lost the coin toss to take the kid to Chuck E. Cheese on his birthday. So I'm going to say it kind of sucks because I didn't like it. I didn't have a good time, but my kid, I took my son, he's 8, and he enjoyed it. So there you go. Angry Birds kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about a bigger splash. Tilda Swinton plays an aging rock star on vacation whose former manager shows up with his sultry daughter and throws her current relationship into chaos.
I'm sorry we didn't call, but we're hiding out.
Not for me. Meet Marianne and Paul.
Oh, I should have known you'd bring a protege.
I'm his daughter.
The looks on your faces.
Love is my temple. Love is the highest day.
Yeah, that's not the stay. What is that?
When did we last do this? How many years ago?
You're pretty domesticated for a rock star.
Have I done anything to upset you?
This movie is almost completely different than Angry Birds. But it's getting the same response from me. Because it's very well written. It's got some great character moments. It's got a great cast, an extremely memorable cast, doing some very daring things. But when it comes down to it, I just didn't care about anybody. I wasn't into the story. I didn't care what happened to anybody. They're unlikable people. And I've said this about movies. I don't like movies that have unlikable characters. If I don't feel like I want to go have a beer with the people that are in the movie, I generally don't like the movie. Oddly enough, I could have a beer with the Angry Birds. I don't think I could have a beer with anybody in A Bigger Splash and enjoy it. For like an hour, there's seemingly no point to this movie. Just that this guy shows up and he causes chaos. But you still have to sit there and think, why is he even there? And why does she allow him to be there? Why doesn't she tell him to go home? And can't they stop this? And what about this guy? And why doesn't he go this place? And why are they letting this person get away with that? I'm just like, they're just unpleasant house guests that have shown up in this person's life. And they've got like Dakota Johnson playing the daughter who is sort of making eyes at Tilda Swinton's boyfriend. And it's just nothing happens for like an hour and a half. And finally something happens at like the 90 minute mark. And I'm like, this is interesting. And then it just kind of fizzles. I mean, the story is there. It's written. It's a well-written character piece. They just forgot to put an actual story behind it. You see a lot of knobs and bollocks in this movie. You see Ralph Fiennes' little Voldemort. You see Matthias Schoenaerts' little Schoenaerts. And you get to see a naked Dakota Johnson and a naked Tilda Swinton. So if you're into watching naked people who are starring in this movie, you're going to be fine. But overall, I just was kind of bored with it. Otherwise, extremely well done. But still, A Bigger Splash kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Neighbors 2, Sorority Rising, and The Nice Guys.
Open Gangnam Style. Gangnam Style.
There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well. Live fast, die young, bad girls do it well.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Going to be continuing in with the movie reviews. The first one I want to talk about this segment is Neighbors 2, Sorority Rising. After getting rid of the frat next door, Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne face a sorority trying to start up in the old house.
What are you doing? We don't hit joints in here.
Your parties must suck.
No, we don't throw parties here. In the United States, sororities are not allowed to throw parties in their own houses. Only frats can.
This is a sexist, restrictive system.
Workers are a sorority that can party the way that we want to.
We're never going to sell our house with a sorority living next door. What are we going to do?
Oh no, I killed a girl.
I'm a pig killer!
We need somebody who can relate to stupid young people.
Hey, neighbors.
First of all, here's my review of the movie. I'm going to do this, break it down really quick, because there's something that I found kind of fascinating in the reaction to this movie by other people. But for me, I liked the first Neighbors. I thought it was funny. It was goofball, silly nuttiness. And it was obnoxious and crass and overly sexploitative, but it still was a funny movie. I thought they had some moments that were genuine, and I thought it worked. It kind of set things up and played well. I hated this one. I'm not even going to bury the lead on that. I hated this one. I was annoyed with this one. I was offended at this one. Not about anything that happens in it in terms of stuff that people do. I was offended at how lazy and stupid it was. It felt like they took one mildly funny scene from the original, which is them taking pot, because there's always pot in a Seth Rogen movie. A Seth Rogen can make a kid's movie and there would be pot in it. So they have this whole weed section of the movie. And I don't smoke weed. I never have. I'm not into it. And I'm not a huge fan of pot humor, but I realize it shows up in movies. So they had a funny scene in the first one, then okay, it worked. And then they just said, let's just stretch that into an entire movie and then put a sorority in it. Because this movie is so much about weed. And this is part of the problem that I see when I know people who smoke weed, they turn into this where it's like, oh, it's just a joke. And then everything in their life becomes consumed by it. And you can see Seth Rogen's entire existence and all the things he does is about nothing but pot. And the movie starts out with them trying to sell their house. And the people are coming for inspection. She's like, oh, go get your bongs. And he goes and he starts grabbing all his bongs. He has his arm filled with bongs. Now they got a daughter already from the first movie that was born. And she's pregnant with another one. And I'm like, how many bongs does this guy have? I mean, he's trying to hide them. And I mean, it's literally just armful of these. And I have to sit there and think, look, especially if you're a grown up adult, if you've got more than what, two bongs, you might have a problem. Because seriously, how many do you need? And they're prominently displayed around the house. And everybody in this movie, I mean, like Rose Byrne's character in the first one, she was fairly level-headed. Yeah, she was sort of overstressed because she's a mom and she's breastfeeding and she's got a young kid and it's stressful. But she was a normal person. And this one, I thought she looked like she was high from the start. And I'm like, well, okay, I guess. So they just became massive dope addicts in this movie, and we're just going to kind of gloss over that. So the weed humor starts there, and it just never lets up. And I'm like, so this is now not about a sorority. It's about weed. Okay, I guess. You know, even the Harold and Kumar movies are less about marijuana than this movie was. But ultimately, the movie is lazily written. It feels like, you know, like 2 years ago, the Neighbors came out, was a huge hit. And it felt like the studio's like, we need a new movie. Write a script. We got a script. Not quite ready. I don't care. We're just going to do it anyways. I'm reluctant to say that this is a half-baked movie because it's baked all the way through. But it's a very lazy script that doesn't feel like it was completely fleshed out. There's massive plot holes in it. And I know it's a stupid comedy, but you still have to make stuff mildly believable. But they don't even do that. There's just so many times that it's just like, well, that doesn't make any sense. Why is this happening? They start out the movie. The whole thing is their house is in escrow. But for some reason, they were too stupid or high to even process what escrow means, which they would have known in the previous film. they didn't realize that they have this 30-day period where the buyers could back out, and then the sorority moves in next door. They make it very clear, 30 days, clock starts ticking, boom, boom, boom. So then the sorority gets this house, and they, but they have to keep going because we need money to pay rent, and we're going to get evicted halfway through the month. And I'm like, what lease did you sign where you have to pay rent within 4 weeks of moving in? You don't. You have to pay rent at the end of the month or the beginning of the next one. And I mean, it's just like logic like that. And there's scenes that you look at and you say, I can see where this was funny, but they needed to workshop this a little bit more. It's an excuse to just do the same thing only with girls. It just didn't fit together. They're just too, and I could go through and I could list all the logical inconsistencies or stuff where I'd be like, well, can they really do that? Can you really just move out of a dorm like that? I don't think you can. You can't just start a sorority, and on no level does it actually pragmatically, logically work. So, you know, great example is Revenge of the Nerds, one of the greatest college movies ever. In Revenge of the Nerds, which has a pot scene in it, for example, but that doesn't take place through the entire movie. But in Revenge of the Nerds, the whole thing is the Lambdas go get their own house and they start their own fraternity. But they at least did the due diligence to say they're freshmen in a dorm and they're kicked out of the dorm because the Alpha Beta burned their house down. And they're like, we're going to let you live off campus and you can join fraternities your first year. That we're going to make an exception to the rule. They explain that. They just don't have the Lambdas show up and build their own house because that doesn't make sense. That's what writing entails. Otherwise, it just felt like everybody was high making this movie, from the actors down to the writers, who are also the actors. So ultimately, I didn't like this movie, but here's the bigger problem. I was shocked at the reviews that were saying it was good. I was shocked and stunned that this poorly written, dumbed down, trashy mess of a film could be beloved. Now I know why. Now I normally don't read other people's stuff, but I was just curious about this. Let me just give a sampling of some of these. These are from Rotten Tomatoes poll quotes. So it's probably the laziest of journalism here on my part, but here's some of the things. Amy Nicholson from MTV says, Neighbors 2 social justice warrior critique feels a lot less sour if it weren't written by 5 white guys. Christy Puchko from Comic Book Resources calls it groundbreaking. Francesca Rudkin from the New Zealand Herald says, it's good to see female characters treated with a little more respect. Meredith Borders from Birth Movies Death says, it elevates the very idea of comedy sequels while hitting upon what it means to be a millennial feminist in a patriarchal society. There it is, people. That's where it's getting the good reviews. Not because of its being a good movie, but because it has the right message. And this is where the critics of today, the millennials who are coming into their own on that, are they becoming what they hated before? These stuffy critics that only cared about the issues in their movies and they couldn't just love a movie for it being an entertainment value. It's all about the political message. It's about pro-sex for girls, pro-drugs and weed jokes, neo-feminism to celebrate awful behavior. Because, you know, that's the thing now. Neo-feminism isn't about raising up women. It's just putting them down into the crap hole that men are in all the time themselves. Because in neo-feminism, you can't criticize the women for this behavior, but you can the guys. Great examples. I've talked about this before. Go back to when I talked about Avengers Age of Ultron, when people were critical of Black Widow having a lot of sexual partners. And they're like, well, Tony Stark doesn't. He's considered cool. I'm like, no, that was a character flaw in Tony Stark that he got over by having a relationship with Pepper Potts. It was growth in the character to get rid of that. Yet Black Widow is heralded for being able to do that, and she doesn't grow out of that. Same thing, go back to Trainwreck, when I talked about Trainwreck last summer, and that movie was heralded. Oh, isn't it great to see a woman who just sleeps around and is skeezy as a lot of guys are, that are usually the ones that have to grow out of it in a romantic comedy? I'm not saying women can't like sex. I'm just saying that it's sleazy behavior, some of this. Just once this girl's on painkillers, and it's playing for a joke. And they're taking massive amounts of drugs. Oh, isn't this awesome? It's liberating for women. No, it's not. This is bad behavior no matter who you are. No matter what your genitalia is. When it comes down to it, all the terrible writing, the bad character moments, logicals, failed plot devices, and jokes being rehashed from the first movie are forgivable for the modern millennial, and I'm going to coin a phrase, polycritic, because they're either raging neo-feminists, or they're a guy who's so terrified of being labeled by the neo-feminist as sexist, like this guy who won't watch the Ghostbusters movie, that they just have to, oh, they embrace it. Oh, isn't it great to see women just having just meaningless, massive amounts of sex with no consequence and no thought of whether it's the right thing to do or even whether it's respectable behavior to yourself or your partner, man or woman. It doesn't matter. Have some morals, people. Anyways, Neighbors 2 Sorority Rising sucks.
It sucks.
Wow, I really overran on that one. I'm going to talk about the night skies in the next segment, along with the box office predictions and, of course, the home cinema roundup. Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse. Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare. In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies, continuing with the movie reviews, getting the one that I missed in the previous segment, because I raged so much about Neighbors 2, Sorority Rising, and neo-feminism and how it's kind of breaking up actual cogent and smart and intelligent film criticism on the internet in general, just in anywhere in general. It doesn't matter whether you're here or New Zealand. Anyways, let's continue with the movie reviews and finish up with the nice guys. Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling play private detectives in 1977 Los Angeles, searching for a missing porn star.
You're a private investigator?
My profession is very complicated, okay?
How much would you charge to beat up my friend Janet?
What?
How much you got?
$30.
That's good. This conversation is over.
The mob is trying to spread its operation to Los Angeles. Somehow, my daughter Amelia is involved.
Please, find her.
You seen this girl?
What's in it for me?
Oh, we can do this the easy way.
No!
We're currently doing it the easy way.
Whatever happened to offering me $20?
It's the recession.
I was a little skeptical of this movie simply because it's really hard to sell in the trailers. It seems like it could be funny. It also seems like it could be terrible. Now, it's directed by Shane Black. And most recently, he did Iron Man 3, which was a massive hit, but it really was more of a Marvel movie than Shane Black movie. If you really want to see something that really has a feel very much like The Nice Guys, check out Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, which stars Robert Downey Jr. And while I didn't love Kiss Kiss Bang Bang from beginning to end, it's an enjoyable movie. And it's funny because his stuff is this weird mix of being completely mainstream and completely subversive at the same time. And you get that with The Nice Guys. Now, it, of course, is a period piece, and I grew up in the 70s. I mean, I was like 6 when this movie would have taken place, and I didn't live in Los Angeles. I lived in Ohio. But it does work on that nostalgia and just sort of the design and the sets and the costumes. It actually has a very authentic 70s feel to it. I mean, some people are wearing obnoxious stuff, but the day-to-day, everyday person outfits seem relatively normal. I also am not always a huge fan of Russell Crowe, but I gotta say, he was really great in this movie. I enjoyed the heck out of Russell Crowe. He was a lot of fun. He was this roughneck who kind of has a heart of gold. And it's not that from the beginning. That doesn't seem like that's what it's gonna be, but it comes out. And I also like the fact that Ryan Gosling was kind of playing against type. He was playing kind of a dork and an idiot and a buffoon himself, which works because too many times he just plays too sexy of a guy and you're just like, eh, it's just another Ryan Gosling character. So I give him credit on this movie, but it's funny. It has a lot of stuff that's funny. It's shocking. There are things that happen in this movie that you find yourself going, oh man, I didn't. Some of these scenes are going to have a hard time selling to a mainstream audience because they are a bit shocking. And there's stuff that happens. I don't know if it gets addressed in an earlier cut of the movie and just got deleted out, or they just kind of let something happen and it's a loose end that they just never address again, which is also kind of cool and subversive. It seems almost planned to have so many loose ends that never come back and rear their heads. So ultimately, The Nice Guys is a funny, hard to categorize film, but immensely enjoyable. Of all the movies that are out this week, this is the one that I had the best time watching. And I'm surprised because I wasn't expecting to. I really enjoyed it. It's one of the best comedies I've seen in a while. So The Nice Guys totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk real quick about the box office. Last week, was I correct? I said that Captain America was going to get $85 million. It didn't. It got $73 million, which is still really good. I mean, going into this weekend, it's pretty much at $1 billion. So everything from this point on is gravy over $1 billion. And honestly, I think this week, I think it's got a good shot at winning. I mean, Angry Birds is... I don't know. Some people think Angry Birds, some people think Neighbors 2 are going to be the big rival for this. Here's the thing with Angry Birds. I think Angry Birds isn't going to play as strong because parents aren't going to like it as much. And it is competing with Captain America and still Zootopia and The Jungle Book for the audience. Even though a lot of people have seen those movies already, there's a lot of choices out there if you're taking the family. I also think that Neighbors 2 is going to suffer because Seth Rogen isn't as big of a star as he was, and Zac Efron has come off a string of flops. I mean, stuff like Dirty Grandpa and We Are Your Friends. The first was stunt casting that worked. You know, chubby old Seth Rogen versus ripped Zac Efron, but Zac Efron still has to prove himself, and he hasn't. So I'm going to say Captain America Civil War is going to win again this weekend with $40 million. Maybe less than that. And if not, it's going to be a horse race. It's going to be right next to it. No one's going to blow anybody else away. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. I'm going to do a real quick sound off. And this is like an extension of my news from the first segment, but this just didn't fit in there. DC Warner Brothers, their DC Films arm, got restructured at the executive level. Now, most people don't care who the name of the person is, but I think it's interesting that in the wake of Batman versus Superman and in the wake of losing a couple directors on, like, because James Wan, I think, bailed on the Aquaman movie, they are restructuring at the executive level. And when something happens at the executive level, they're not rewriting scripts. They're coming down with grand sweeping changes that you may not see in the films right away, but they're going to course correct. And that's actually been DC's problem from the beginning, is they've been in nothing but course correction mode since the Avengers made tons and tons of money. And they didn't know how to get there, and they rushed it. Everyone's saying it's Snyder's fault. Snyder's fault for Batman versus Superman, and he's not going to be able to do the Justice League. Who knows? He might be pulled from the Justice League, or he might be pulled from the second half of the Justice League. Who knows? This is very new news. But of course, because there's so much hate out there, so many people who just, I mean, I've never seen so much hate for a movie before, like I'm seeing for Batman versus Superman. When people don't like it, they really don't like it, and they want to stick it to the movie, and they're gleefully writing stories and saying, oh, it's Snyder's fault, and he's the big problem, and he's the... Well, no, it's the part of it is that they put Snyder in charge of, at this point, it was going to be four movies, and it was his job to launch an entire universe. First of all, Batman versus Superman was never going to do what people were predicting. It was never going to be $1.5 billion or $2 billion movie. Avengers took five movies to get there, and Jurassic World was the reboot of an uber-popular franchise from the 90s. Now, one person had said to me, well, but two standalone Batman movies made so much. I'm like, this is not the fourth Batman movie, and everybody knows that. But even if you take that thinking, if you look at Batman Begins, it made like $200 and some million. It wasn't a big hit. It wasn't until The Dark Knight became a phenomenon. But then there was a regression to The Dark Knight Rises, and that wasn't that good of a movie. Following that trajectory, Batman versus Superman coming in the 300 millions is exactly where that trajectory was going with the Batman movies. I mean, The Dark Knight Rises made significantly less domestically than The Dark Knight. And the international growth that countered that can partly be explained by just it being a big explosive movie like a Transformers film and just by the expansion of the marketplace. It's like the Matrix movies and Mockingjay. It's not what that movie does, it's what the next movie does that causes problem. And I think this can be seen as either a follow-up to Man of Steel or The Dark Knight Rises, neither of which were massive, critically beloved movies that they could have been. And so I think that stifled its box office more than just the movie itself. Because if you look at the cinema score and if you look at user ratings, it's doing okay. But still, it's going to end with close to $900 million worldwide. That's well into the top 50 movies of all time and possibly the top 40 movies of all time, depending on how high it goes. In no way is this a flop. But take note, because it's all about expectations, when Fox releases those Avatar sequels, they're not going to make $700 million domestic and $2 billion worldwide box, so you can't guarantee that. Ultimately, I think the one person who is also to blame for this is Christopher Nolan. Now, a lot of people are like, oh, you can't say anything bad about Christopher Nolan because he's a god among men. Now, he's got his problems. He co-authored and produced Man of Steel, and he was brought in specifically to do to Superman what he did to Batman. Make him realistic. Not gritty and dark, realistic. And the Superman that we saw in Man of Steel was never fully embraced. And that movie underperformed. Now, when Warner Brothers put all their eggs in one basket and they had that Superman off of Man of Steel sequel turn into their launching pad for the entire DC universe, it wasn't a really solid platform. And that platform was partly built by Christopher Nolan. So yeah, you can blame Zack Snyder all you want. And I don't know if that's what they're saying at Warner Brothers, but I'm saying you can certainly blame Zack Snyder for Batman vs. Superman, its underperformance, but you also got to blame all the decisions that were made, including bringing in Christopher Nolan, because I remember from the beginning people were going, a dark, gritty, realistic Superman? Maybe we want the Boy Scout. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Real quick, let's roll into the home cinema roundup. The one that I really want to hit is The Witch. This is a fantastic film. It's probably going to end up being one of my favorite films of the year because I watched it again on Blu-ray, and I loved it even more than I did when it first came out. Fantastic slow burn horror film. Gorgeous. If you also want to watch it kind of in the privacy of your own home, go to Fat Guys at the Movies and look for Are My Drinking Game. Get a little toasted while you watch the film. There's also Dirty Grandpa, which was Zac Efron's movie, and Robert De Niro. I actually thought it was funny, but a lot of people didn't. And then some smaller ones, Kindergarten Cop 2 and Cop Rock, the complete series. Remember that show? You probably don't. That's it for this week. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about the new films Alice Through the Looking Glass and X-Men Apocalypse. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.